with the best yet to come. I'm really excited about our next presentation. Louise Bedford, her husband Chris, and in fact her business partner Chris, have become good friends of Pam and I over the last couple of years as we realised the synergies in successful business people, entrepreneurs, traders, share traders in property investors. You know, you've heard me say it a few times, the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. And I know a number of you here are fans of Louise, part of her mentorship program as well. Over the last couple of years, there's been quite a lot of synergies, and we've actually found that there's quite some cross-pollination. Louise isn't going to specifically talk about shares today, but I'm very excited about the topic she's talking about. You're going to get a lot out of it. So without any further ado, let's welcome a good personal friend and somebody who's very authentic and made money in business and is a property investor, Louise Bedford.
Thank you so much, Michael. Oh, look, I'm so excited about presenting for you. You know, last year I came to Wealth Retreat, but I didn't present, but I've really got a good flavour as to what it was all about. And this year to be a participant, it's terrific. Now, as Michael said, I'm a share trader. I've been trading for, gosh, it's since 1990 now, so it's quite a long time. So what I thought I'd do, because I don't feel that, because I do have property, but my husband looks after the property side. So I don't feel that I can educate you on the property side, because you all probably know more than I do. But in terms of shares, I can definitely help you there. And what I can talk about as well is some of the commonalities between share traders' brains and property investors' brains, and in fact, business entrepreneurs' brains as well, because there are certain commonalities that make us succeed. Would you agree? So what I'm going to take you through today is a presentation called What Were You Thinking? Now, who's ever felt that they've made a decision that didn't quite pan out the way they thought it should have? And that happens regardless of your occupation and where you are at in your stage of life. Now, just so that we know, this is a legal requirement. I have to mention to you that I'm a share trader. I'm not a broker. I'm licensed to give general advice, but please don't ask me about any of your specific little darling shares. Should you buy them? Should you sell them? What should you do with them? Because I cannot answer it legally. Now, for those of you that don't know my background and what makes me tick, so I've been trading since about 1990. I have actually the three out of the top five best-selling books of books on the share market. I'm actually the most quoted author in the Australian share market, which is kind of interesting because I like that better than being Australia's best-selling author of books on the share market, because what that means is that I've helped a lot of people. So I've helped lots and lots of people write books and discover their unique qualities of being a good trader. And I've also been involved with every major trading body. I've been across every major trading body stage, and I've spoken for everyone. And frankly, I've just enjoyed having the lifestyle that being a full-time trader has allowed. So there's a lot to it with this, isn't it? It's a bit of a longevity type of thing when you're looking for a mentor. I was talking with Anthony and David over lunch. We were talking about when you're looking for a mentor, look for somebody with longevity. And I think that that's a real key, especially when you look at Michael's background as well. Now, these are my baby candles. Aren't they lovely? Who's seen them before? Gorgeous, aren't they? Oh, the little green ones showing that they're growing and they're happy and all excited about that day's trade because the close is higher than the open. And look at the red ones. Oh, poor darlings, they're bleeding, aren't they? Bleeding. The funds are bleeding out of that position. Now, that is almost like a position of pain, isn't it, when you see lots of red and you're the one who owns it. Now, who has got shares in the room, just to give me an idea? Oh, okay, that's most of you. That's lovely. Now, when I first started trading, I have to say I was extremely excited. I thought it could be just one of those situations where I could retire early and live the life of my dreams and maybe own a small island called New Zealand. As time went on, I just thought things would go up and up and up and everything I touched would turn to gold and there'd be no reason to fear and everything would be absolutely adoring and absolutely the way that I'd always planned. And in fact, I thought that I'd land in a huge pot of gold. How long do you think that lasted for? Around about the first week. I thought I would look like this and that money would rain from the sky. I really thought that this would be my chance, that I wouldn't have to be a wage slave, and this could be my strike for freedom. Now, unfortunately, things didn't quite go that way, I have to say. It took me 3 years to break even, and instead of everything I touched turning to gold, something like this happened, and I was left in flames and in tears, and I looked more like this person. Who's related with that before? Have you ever felt like that sometimes? Yeah. I want to talk to you about this, but think in relation to property, because I'm going to ask you to talk with your partner about this in just a minute. Now, based on a Brad Barber and Terence O'Dean study of 72,000 households in the US, these are the results they came out with. So I'm not saying something to be actually, I guess, undermining us in any way, girls, because you know I'm on your side. And in fact, the women make 2% more on average than the blokes as traders. Now, cumulatively, that means a heck of a lot. It's quite amazing what that actually returns. So women are more successful. But we have some peculiar requirements. One of the things is we very much lack confidence. We feel that we're not worthy. We feel that we're not going to be able to do this. We feel that it's a male domain. We have a big need to talk about our trades. And we suffer, we suffer a lot from self-doubt. Now, you will be a very patient man who will nod a lot. That man down in the back corner is probably one of the most patient men in the world, because really, honestly, I was so governed by the impressions of the share market. Our shares would go up by 1 cent and I would run home to Chris and say, oh my gosh, we're going to be able to retire. I'm not even going to have to work this job anymore. Do you know what this means? We can have 15 children and have nannies to look after them. Not one, multiple nannies. We can go overseas. It's going to be absolutely incredible. And he'd go, yes, sweetheart. And then the next day I'd come home from work and I'd say, oh, the shares have gone down. It's awful. It's awful. We're going to lose everything. I'm going to be working till I'm 72. Do you know what? We're never going to have children. We're never going to be able to afford anything. We're going to be living in a cardboard box under Richmond Bridge. That'll be it. We're going to be done for. We are never going to succeed. And you know what he'd say? Yes, darling. Yeah. This went on for a few years until, really, he started to look a bit like this. Now, my darling Chris is a trader now too, and there are some things that affect him more than us girls. And one of the things that male traders face is over-trading and overconfidence. Now, they've shown, using the Brad Barber and Terence O'Dean study, they've shown that the men turn over their portfolio a lot more because they're naturally more aggressive, they have a bit more testosterone, and it's all very exciting for them. You know, they're often quite attracted to shares on the riskier side compared to women who are more conservative in nature. They have a lot of aggression that they like to work out on the market. And you'll often hear them saying things like, the market is wrong, but I am right. Yeah. Do you think the market could be wrong? No. The market's never wrong. Never wrong. Just your impressions of it are. Now, if you are working with somebody who happens to be your partner and is of the opposite gender, I think it's good to consider in advance how they're going to react to some of your, I guess, shenanigans, because everybody has in their heart the ability to be an absolute lunatic. Would you agree? Yes. So it just depends on how that inner lunatic of yours is received by your spouse. Do you know, these days, rather than flipping out quite so much, Chris has trained me very, very, very well, because he just ignores the flip out. So I don't get attention for it, and the flip out seems to have vanished from my behaviour. Yeah. Don't give him a microphone, whatever you do, George. Now, what I want to talk to you is about our brains, because our brains are wired very differently. Males and females are actually different structurally. Now, I'm not sure who has a background in medicine here. I know that Kristen does, so some of you may already know a little bit about this, but I want to apply this knowledge to trading and to apply this knowledge also to the property market. Now, some of the major components of the brain that come into play in the share market are firstly the prefrontal cortex. Now, especially the left prefrontal cortex, some of you might know that that's your parental control. So that's the thing, girls, that says don't sleep with him because you don't have contraception on you. Okay? For men, that's the thing that says don't jump your BMX bike over that massive ramp because you could break your arm. Now, whose prefrontal cortex, based on those two examples, do you think would be stronger? Depends where you grew up. That's nice. Females. Females have a larger prefrontal cortex. There are more dominant synapses and connections in that prefrontal cortex, and this is designed to be successful. This is one of the reasons why we're successful. So with traders, we know that overtrading leads to underperformance. That prefrontal cortex is a pretty damn good thing, girls. There's also the hippocampus. Now, this is about decision-making and memory. Who feels that they remember the good things in life more, hands up, or the bad things in life more? Good things? Okay, or bad things? Okay. Now, this can be an individual way that you appreciate living. Now, generally, what we do is we look back with rose-coloured glasses unless we have had a catastrophic event. And psychologists, we call this one trial learning. So I've got a couple of degrees. I've got one in psychology and one in business. And I love seeing how psychology affects our behaviour. Now, this one trial learning is either going to make you or break you. Wrong that it actually sends you for a six. Now, some of you in the room have already confided to the group and to each other about that trial. Now, it could have been a property situation that went bad. It could have been a business. It could have been a relationship that actually had a difficult, difficult time for you. Now, that imprints itself on your mind, and either you will go on to overcome it or it will crush you. It'll crush you. And you know what makes a difference? Your mindset. The same event can happen to two people, can't it? And we know they'll react differently. The hippocampus plays a major role there. There's also the amygdala. Now, the amygdala is our emotional centre. Now, what they've actually found with the emotional centre is that when they put the traders that basically, you know, we all volunteer for a different type of scientific study to wrap me in an MRI and tell me about what I'm thinking. But they've wrapped traders in an MRI and they've found that that emotional centre fires off incredibly. Winning, losing trades makes no difference. It actually fires that off. So it's fascinating to see. So do you feel that that would be relevant to the property market? Have you felt your blood pressure increase? Has anybody done a bit of a sweat? Has anybody thought, I'll be fine with that decision, and then 3 o'clock in the morning you wake up and you realise you're not fine with that situation at all? There are a lot of similarities here. So being able to master your brain, it's not just about getting better at, I guess, living with our fellow human beings. It's actually becoming more successful in terms of our wealth as well. Now, some of you might have heard that we only use 10% of our brain. Who's heard that? Yeah, it's a big fat myth. People used to think that before we could actually measure what the brain was doing when we gave it situations. Now, we don't use 10% of the brain. We use every single part of our brain because we know from an evolutionary biology point of view that parts of our brain would have died off if we had have only used 10%. It just wouldn't have been needed. So through MRIs, we can do amazing things and we can look inside the mind. Now, I want to talk to you about a few different hormones and neurotransmitters. Now, everybody has varying balances, and depending on you're male or female, you'll have different balances of these hormones. But what they did is they looked at a study of traders. They got 12 top-of-their-game male traders and 12 males who were actually losing. And they put them in an MRI, and they also measured blood. So each morning, they'd take a blood sample. Now, what they found is that there's three major things that determine our success. And it used to be thought that the more testosterone you had, the more alpha male you were, and then the more testosterone you'd secrete, so them become. And they took that from apes. Somebody went around collecting the urine of apes and went, hey, look at this, all of the leaders have a lot of testosterone. Isn't that amazing? And the higher up in the hierarchy they got, the more testosterone they secreted. So would it make sense that we used to think testosterone was a good sign, girls? Did you ever feel a bit like as a trader for the ones there, did you ever think, oh gosh, I wish I had a bit more testosterone, I think I could conquer this? Because some of my girls do. Do you know what they found though? With the successful male traders, they had huge levels of testosterone, but they also had massive levels of dopamine. Dopamine's the calming neurotransmitter. So not only were they fabulous about getting excited and taking action, they also calmed themselves down very, very effectively. And women, we have more dopamine and we have more oxytocin. And oxytocin is that calming, calming, nice thing that we get when we're breastfeeding, when we're eating chocolate, when we're making love. Yeah. So I think it's fair to say that we're not just a function of all of these hormones and all of these impulses that come through our body. There are ways to control it. And I want to talk to you about some of the things that we can do to control our emotions and to actually get better results. Now, one of them is education. And they've taken the autopsied brains of people who went to university and people who didn't, and they've actually found some structural differences. One of them is that people who went to university have brains that are 9% heavier on average. Isn't that interesting? After all the alcohol. Exactly. So education can actually help in terms of developing our brains. And this is something that has become more and more relevant because as we have an ageing population, you will have noticed that more and more people are knowing people who have dementia or Alzheimer's or some age-related neural decline. Has anybody got somebody in their life that has? Yes. See, most people in the room, it's interesting, isn't it? So by the end of this presentation, I want to show you some things, some statistically significant things you can do to stop you going down that path personally, and that you can pass on to your children and your family members and even your family members who are affected so that you can actually develop them. Now, I know there's nothing we can do to stop the decline completely, but we can do some things to halt it. And the medicine that we've been able to, I guess, apply there has helped, but there are some exercises that we can do as well. Now, the other thing is that they had a look at a study of computer users and they had a group of non-computer users. And they looked at the differences in their brain. Now, who feels that computers would make a difference? Quick show of hands to your brain. And you'd be right. You'd be right. And in fact, what they did is they took those non-users, they trained them up over 5 days, 8 hours a day, so they basically tortured them because they've never used a computer before. And then they redid the test. And in only 5 days, 8 hours a day, the brains resembled each other. So it's not necessarily the case where you have to have done it for life. These are things that we can do right now. Just recently, my husband, thinking I needed an extra brain cell, bought me one. Isn't that nice? I only have one though, so I don't have two to rub together. But I'm quite happy with the one. Yeah. Now, we have billions of these in our brain. Perhaps this is not to scale though. Depends how big your head is. Now, the interesting things with this is that we can affect, it's not only the number, but we can affect the method that they transmit. And this is what we're trying to do. Because you might have heard that brain cells never grow back. Have you heard that? Anybody that's been out on a bender? Yeah, you've just kissed 500 goodbye or more? Yeah, some do grow back. They have found that some do grow back. However, it's not how many brain cells you've got. It's how you use them. It's how they communicate with each other. It's the synapses firing to trigger off other brain cells. So it's not just the total number. It's actually how they talk to each other. They can be applied right now. Another thing that they looked at is they did a study of 8-year-olds. Who's got children in the room? Youngish? Yeah? They looked at 8-year-olds and they got them to study piano for 1 year. Now, with those children that had studied piano for 1 year, this is a 30-year study. It's a longitudinal study. There was actually significant brain differences even if that child quit piano. Now, isn't that interesting? That's something that you can have from your childhood that can continue through life. Who gave up piano? Few. But your brain will never be the same. It'll never be the same. It's a good thing. It wasn't just the tormenting from your parents to be able to keep practicing. So it's quite an interesting thing because we can pass this on to our children and we can all end up healthier because of it. Healthier not just in our bodies, but I'm thinking more in our minds. Yeah. Do you know they say that the person who will live to the age of 200 has already been born? So isn't that fascinating? And I don't know. I prefer it to be in my lineage, but hey, it could be in one of our families. It's a wonderful thing. So there's a lot of inspiration we can draw from that. Now, I want to talk to you about a case study. This is Kate Johnson. Kate is the youngest person who's ever been through my mentor program, and at the age of 21, she quit her job and she traded, which is just amazing because really when you look at her, she's so fast with picking up concepts. She's so clever to be able to instantly get what I was talking about. Now, my mentor program is a six-month process, so I get to know everybody very, very intimately, and then they get lifetime membership after that. So this is an interesting thing for me because I've been able to track traders over the last 12 years and see where they end up and see who is successful. This is not just like a weekend seminar where I go bye-bye at the end. I'm with these people for life. Now, Kate picks up concepts so quickly, even now. She's 24 now. Her enthusiasm was amazing. In fact, she was so enthusiastic, she absolutely daunted the forum that we were writing on. She questioned and asked and, oh my gosh, and encouraged and sent personal messages to everybody and sent emails, and it was so lovely. She sent flowers and pictures and cards to people that she felt were struggling. She seemed to have every amount of enthusiasm that you could possibly muster, partially because of youth. And that is what the neural studies have shown. Who's felt that as we've got a little bit older, we've lost a little bit of enthusiasm? Do you feel the bit of the weight of the world? This girl didn't have any of that. Wow, so free, so easy. Do you know the difficulty was? Because she had so few connections, she couldn't relate what we were talking about to other experiences. Now let's compare this with Ted, my darling Ted Hurst, who I've also had the pleasure of training for many, many years. He has recently told me that he's going to die and he's looking forward to it because it's another of life's experiences. How is that even possible? He moved down from Darwin several years ago so that he could train by my side. He is a full-time trader. He's just recently got out of the market over the last month because I said to him, if you are dying, I think you should take your positions off. And he said, do you think so? I said, yes. And he said, but you know what I'm in. You know where to find it. You can do it after I'm gone. They're good trades. They haven't hit their stop loss. Oh, so pragmatic. I'm going to see him on June 4th. He tells me he'll be alive at that stage. Now, Ted is nearly going to get a postcard from the Queen, but he's going to just miss out, which is such a shame because he's been really looking forward to it. He feels that he's young to be dying because his mother died at 113. She was a bitter woman, though, he tells me, and he's quite a nice, happy person, so he thinks that perhaps, you know, the bad actually live a bit longer. Now, Ted made very, very few mistakes. When I started him trading, I could not believe the effort he went to. He ploughed into the trading books that I gave him, and he asked for more. He took so long, though, to read those books. So long that I was really wondering whether it was worthwhile for him. How many years would pass before he actually put on his first trade? Is this something that he really wanted to persist with? Or is this something that was just a hobby and a passing of the time type of aspect? He, I have to say though, had so many connections in his brain, as we do as we get older, that once he learned a concept, it stuck. Who feels that? As you've got older, you get the concept and it sticks. So it might take you longer to trace through all those connections, but once you've nailed it for good and you will never drop it. Now, it's a lovely thing because it does explain why we get a bit slower. It does. We've got more experience to draw on. We've got more filing systems to look through to be able to find that unique file that we were looking for. We experience tip-of-the-tongue phenomenon more as we get over the age of 40. So we think we know something, but what was it? What was the thing that we were trying to remember? And, oh, where were the car keys? Anybody relate? Thank goodness for that. Now, Ted constantly goes around looking for his house keys, but it doesn't worry him because he just takes it in his stride because he knows that's part of life's experiences. Yeah, he's really hoping that I'll be there as he dies, and I don't know whether I'm up for that. It's hard. I find that because I've known him for such a long time and he's such a positive person, that it's the onus is on me to stay positive about this. It's quite a tricky thing. I talked to his daughter the other day and I said, I'm having trouble being as positive as he is. And she said, yeah, I think we'd just better grow up. Just lift your chin up and go, okay, well, maybe his view is terrific. You know, so let's encourage him. Now, I think there's a lot to be said for having some age on our side, but having the enthusiasm of youth. So could everybody just stand up, give a big stretch, okay, and pretend that you're 21. Take a deep breath. Stretch as a 21-year-old. That's it. Okay. Now, everybody stretch as high as you possibly can up in the air. As high as you possibly can. That's it. So you're stretching as a 21-year-old and stretch just a tiny bit higher. A little bit higher. Yeah, you weren't stretching as high the first time, were you? Have a seat. Very good. So one of our fears, I think, and this is whether we're older or younger, one of our deepest fears is that we won't measure up. Now, you might have heard that statement that people are so scared of public speaking that they'd prefer to die by fire. Have you heard people talk about that? Yeah. Do you know, though, really, if my child was on the other side of that fire, I'd plough through that fire regardless, and I know that you would too. I don't know if that study's actually accurate. Do you know, after years and years of mentoring people and counselling people and using my psychology background also, because it has come in very handy for this, I think people's biggest fear is that they won't live up to what their families are expecting of them. And this has a lifelong implication. If you are constantly feeling that you are not living up to what others expect from you, it makes you more likely to lie or cover up or save face when you have failed. And it's a difficult thing because as adults, we all have to try and take responsibility for our actions. But if we have this as a predominant fear, this can actually affect our behaviour. Inside, everybody is a little child. Everybody. And this is something I think that regardless of what we do in life, it is true. And at different times, our inner child will display itself more viciously than others. Now, I know for myself, there are certain triggers with this. Now, I'll give you perhaps an example. I came up to the Gold Coast to meet my web guy. My web guy, who is brilliant, but he's a bit critical. He's a bit critical. And girls, you know we have more tears than men, don't you? We do. My tears were this far from coming ready to spring out. I had to get up and move away. Because, you know, he said some things that he didn't even mean to hurt, but they really did hurt. They really did hurt. He questioned my authority. He made me feel like a git, you know? He did, with his words. Have you ever felt that way, or is it just me? Sometimes it happens, isn't it? You know, where we're in a situation where it hurts us, it hurts our heart. Now, that was not necessarily the adult Louise. The adult Louise would have taken on board what he said and said, that's interesting that you feel that way, but I beg to differ. That would have been extremely adult. Instead of, I'm going to get a green tea now. Yes, that was the child Louise. And always there's a conflict, there's a fight in us. There's a fight between the child and there's a fight between the adult. And whoever wins, sometimes you don't want the kid to win. Sometimes it's interesting to see the implications. Yeah. Do you know one of the things they've found with people who have so-called nervous breakdowns is that they never give their child a chance to come out. It is interesting, isn't it? They stay in the adult part of their brain until the adult squashes the child and the child was saying, oh, I'm not happy with this, and then they tantrum. And the tantrum is the actual breakdown. So I would like you to ask your inner child, do you know, sometimes all you have to do is say, little Louise, or if perhaps your name's Louise, it would work better to say little Louise. But little Louise, what do you really want to do? Now, do you know what I really loved about Michael's sessions is that he was trying to get that inner child to come forward and to claim and to be creative and to have that enthusiasm and to have that childlike longing that sometimes our adult part squashes down. And you know that tantrum can be ugly. The tantrum can come in the form of burnout. It can come in the form of an affair, a divorce, a walkout from the job, an inappropriate decision in property, a self-sabotage move in the share market. So please do listen to your inner child. I think it's very, very important. And there's a whole section in my mentor program where I talk about this and the inner lunatic that lives within. We love our inner lunatics. Now, I also want to chat about near-miss psychology, and I want you to apply this to the property market because this is very, very key in the share market. Now, what they've found is that people who nearly got a good deal actually activate reward centres in their brain. Now think of what this means. You nearly won Tats Lotto. Nearly. And you feel so good about it, which gives you the ability to buy another Tats ticket. Yeah? Because you nearly got there. You know, that girl over there in the corner, the guys were all checking her out. I could ask her out, you might be thinking, blokes. I could ask her out, and if I did, she'd say yes. But you don't ask her out, because she's scary. She may be a bunny cooker, but she may be the love of your life. So, with the share market, to apply this to the share market, is a lot of traders in their own lunchtime are an absolute legend. They think they've done the right thing. They believe that they've actually traded incredibly well. They actually believe they've got the Midas touch. And I'll give you perhaps an example of one of these, and I think he was quite subject to near-miss psychology. I had an email a few years ago, and it started out so well. I was actually quite chuffed. I should have stopped reading after the second paragraph. He said, "Oh, Louise, you know, I bought your book in 1996, and I loved it. I traded $1 million up to 18 million. Oh, I was feeling good. I was about to ask him for a testimonial. I traded that $18 million down a bit, and now I'm in a bit of trouble. And I'll keep on reading, and down a bit means he's negative $3 million. So he has gone like this and like this. However, do you know what the email was about? He was asking me for money because he had a proven track record. He said, if you just loan me $1 million, then I will trade that money because I'm a successful trader. And I'll trade my way out of this situation. Successful? Perhaps half the story. Successful on the way up, but it's what we keep, isn't it? It's what we keep. And often when Chris Tate, my business partner, and I see traders' actual sheets where they can plot their equity curve, which means how much money they've made, we see an interesting story. We have somebody confident standing in front of us with a big smile, expecting brownie points, perhaps a pat on the back from their mentors. And then we actually look and we see what they've been doing and we break it down. You know, sometimes they haven't even quantified their loss. Sometimes there's one guy who's done the mentor program now, but he just caught up with us the other day and he has never quantified his loss. He's there introducing his new wife to me. They've got their baby. It's all so lovely. And I'm like, oh, this is so nice because I know he's doing so well. Like, I've seen his last couple of years. It's lovely. It's just terrific. I was so happy. And then eventually the wife said, aren't you going to tell her? I'm like, tell me what, you know, I know what you've been up to. It's just, it's a divine thing. She goes, no, before the mentor program. And I said, oh, what's been happening? And he has basically got an options loss that he has not added up. He is paying for it with everything they own, selling property after property to cover this options loss, hoping to trade out of it with his effective trading habits that he's developed now, but unable to trade out of it. Because it's too big a debt. You know, once it gets teeth, it seems to get a bit of momentum. So his near-miss psychology was saying to him, you are success. You are doing so well. Look at your equity curve. It's growing. Let's just ignore the last 5 years. Let's look at the 2 years where it's going up. Yeah. Now, we are all subject to something called cognitive dissonance. What we do is we reject contrary information. Now, the good part about this story is that you actually listened to the information. So you made a very balanced decision. But we tend as people to reject contrary information and to actually hold on to the things that are positive. Now, I've done it myself recently. I've been looking for a car. Oh my gosh, Michael, you'll be so glad because I've been driving him crazy. What car should I buy? And he's going, oh, for goodness sake. I finally found the car that I'm going to buy. Now, my conflict was that I'm a kind of a convertible girl, but I've got two kids, so they won't really fit on the roof rack of the convertible. Yeah, so it's kind of difficult. Yeah, I tried, Maisie, I tried. So I was looking for, I guess, the car that I could get enough confirming information to say that I'd made the right decision, and I do feel that I have got there. But traders often reject that contrary information. They ignore their stop loss. They focus on the good news about their trade. They look at perhaps what would be the equivalent in the property market. You might look at a good valuation when you know that valuation was from 2007. You want to be right. And often traders shut themselves off. Now, what we found, especially with that gentleman that I said about lunch, he had shut himself off so much from those around him that he didn't have that support system. He didn't have that support mechanism in place anymore. Now, a lot of this comes back to locus of control. Now, some of you might be familiar with this concept. It's whether you blame yourself or whether you blame others. Now, you know, we're taught that it's important to be successful to blame ourselves for everything. We've been taught that, haven't we? There's a gentleman called Martin Seligman who wrote the book Learned Optimism, and he's actually one of the top psychologists investigating suicide in 17-year-olds, and it often is occurring in the male population, which is it's a cumbersome, difficult thing to investigate because there's so much emotion involved with that. So he's done very, very well with this. He's found some things that make people give up. And one of the things that makes people give up is if they take responsibility for everything. It's interesting, isn't it? Because we think of it as a success outcome, but in terms of optimism and persistence, often if we blame ourselves for everything, we just go, well, it's all too hard. So what we must do is be selective. We must be careful about who we attribute blame to and in what situation. If it was things that we can control in some way, we have every right to blame ourselves. But if it's something that we have not been able to control, then we cannot blame ourselves because if we do, we'll quit. Yeah. So traders that have, I guess, that arrogance that everything they do always right, that's where you've got a locus of control issue. So I think be careful about where you're attributing blame. What I'd like to do is have a quick chat with you about where trading could end up. Now, I do not have enough experience in the property market to apply it to property, but I'd like you to just think into the future about not only your own property investing, but how this could be for your children and the generations to come. I'm going to talk to you about what I think could be the future of trading. Now, I'm not sure who's a futurist in here. Has anybody got interest in studying the works of futurists? No, couple. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. One of the things that they say is that the singularity is going to occur, and it's going to occur in approximately 2040. Now, what this means, who's heard of the singularity? Couple? Yeah, isn't it fascinating? What it means is that there will be self-modifying computers. So these baby computers will breed more baby computers that are slightly modified, and then more baby computers will be bred that are slightly modified again. So can you see that they're adapting, a la sort of Terminator type of time frame in your mind? But this is what they think is going to happen. Now, the reason why they can say this with such certainty is because of a thing called Moore's Law. Now, with Moore's Law, we know that computer processing power actually doubles every 2 years. Now, who has noticed that things are just moving at a breakneck rate with that? It is amazing, isn't it? And in fact, if you look back, it's just incredible what we have in our own home. Those rooms that used to be filled in banks with all the reels and the old AS400s. I mean, now, amazing rate of progress. And in fact, they say that in our generation right now, we experience in 5 years what our grandparents experienced in changes of technology in 75 years. It's that rate. So no wonder we have trouble keeping up. You know, it can be daunting, can't it? Has anybody come across a piece of new technology and felt a bit scared? You betcha. It's because it's all happening so quickly. It's just, I think, one of those things that when we don't have time to adapt, we freak out. Yeah. Now, some of the things that this could lead to in the trading world, they have found that with the way things are going, like I don't know if a lot of you know my background, but one of the reasons why I'm a full-time trader is because I actually had an awful health issue and I needed to stop work back in 1996, I think it was. Yeah. I know some of you have got awful health issues as well. So I'm not taking away from that. But for me, it was a biggie. I was a national manager. I worked for Dun & Bradstreet, which was a credit information company. I was actually the youngest national manager that actually had risen through the ranks, which was very, very exciting. I had an ego this big. I had secretaries, I had sales reps all around Australia. I actually also had a team in Canada. How exciting. Yes. And what happens to one after they believe that they are God? We know, don't we? Often what happens is that your ego becomes so expanded that you miss warning signals. Now, for me, the warning signal occurred in my ring finger on my right hand. Strange, isn't it? I just thought, oh, it's a little twinge. It hurts, but it'll go away. And it was actually on April 1st, so it's, hey, April Fool's. By the next day, it had started to hurt a lot. And who has got a niggle right now that they're ignoring and they're not going to see the doctor about? Pretty much everybody, yeah? Because we don't go to see the doctor very regularly. When we have a little thing on our finger that hurts, who thinks a finger's going to be life-threatening? How could it be? Within 2 weeks, I had lost the use of both of my arms. I couldn't go to the toilet alone. I couldn't open a door alone. I could not function in any way without somebody helping me. And I'd look at my hands and I'd look at my arms and I would will them to move. And there was no movement there whatsoever. And there was this wave of agony, this pain that I have never experienced in my entire life. Like, since then, I've given birth twice without drugs and it was nothing like giving birth. I would give birth again like that. Never, ever ask me to go through those 3 years where my arms would not move and felt like fire. It was awful. So I had to leave my job. Now, a lot of people wonder why trading is important to me, why I seem to be incredibly passionate about it, and I'll tell you why. What would I have done if I didn't trade? It horrifies me. People go through life with one source of income, one source of income. We'd developed a couple of sources. One of them was called my husband. Hurrah! Do you know what, though? That source had just dried up because he'd started his new business when this happened. The other source of income for us, other than my job, was the share market. Now, I'd just worked out how to do it. I'd just tamed the beast and somewhat cracked the code, but I was nowhere near ready to be a full-time trader. Yeah, I'd just been trading for about 5 or 6 years then. It really wasn't long enough for me to get my training wheels off. But all of a sudden, I was without a job. They didn't want me. They don't want you as a national manager, funnily enough, when you have a disability and when you can't move and when you're pretty sad all of the time and when you can't open a door for yourself and when they have to give you an assistant to take you to the dunny. Yeah, perhaps not the dignified image that they were seeking for a company like Dun & Bradstreet. So I traded and I traded and I traded. I traded with a pen in my mouth so I could tap on the computer and I got fast. I had a broker on speed dial so that he could do the calculations for me. It's very hard to speak with a pen in your mouth. Very hard. I realised that trading was one of the few things that I could do and that I could continue to do, and that regardless of my disability, I could continue to trade. And do you know how liberating that was? It was that all of a sudden, it dawned on me, I did not need to be responsible for a group of sales reps. I didn't need to be responsible to an employer who really did not have my best interests at heart. And I could be responsible for myself and my family. And even though it was terrifying and I just about wet myself when I actually realised that, it was also incredibly liberating. And that is the power of what we have in our hands these days. If this had have happened 30 years earlier, I don't know what would have become of me. But because we are right here, right now, and things are only getting better, it's quite amazing what we have in our hands. And since then, I've attracted large groups of people with bizarre, strange disabilities, amputees, people who have had like a bacterial infection, so they've lost both of their arms, people with brain tumours, people with ongoing issues, ongoing and degenerative issues, and has left for them. Some of them have not left their home. Like one of the gentlemen who is in your mentor program, Penny, Mark Conway, who you probably wouldn't have heard much from, he has had a degenerative brain disorder, which meant he has not left his home. It has been horrible for him. He has got a physical deformity because he fell out of a tree and he got run over by his best friend in a digger. By doing the mentor program, I saw him for the first time without a hat on. He's had 32 operations on his face. His brain is mangled. It's just lovely to see what it has been able to do for a gentleman who just did not leave the home, whereas now he goes to meetings with our traders. This is beyond trading for me. This is up there with oxygen. It is. Because I think to be able to have a conduit and lead people into something that can give them independence is lovely. And the future will only get better. And I've talked about this with Mark quite extensively. Because what we've found is that if you are holding a phone or an iPad, it becomes, in your brain, an extension of your body. Yeah. So if somebody goes to hit your iPad, you pull it back and you experience pain. Because it's your body. Interesting, isn't it? So they've got amputees with neurally connected arms that behave through thinking. So pretty soon, we could trade by thinking. I like that idea. Maybe 2040. Who knows? Supposedly, I was supposed to retire on my form in Dun & Bradstreet in the year 2034. So 2040 is not that much after I retire. Kind of retired now, though. Mobile charting. There's a lot to be said for having things with us instantaneously. So we could have screens that flick with a flick of our eyelid that we can see hovering in front of us. Sure, we'd have a bit of brain overload. Yeah, because that would mean that you really can't switch off. But there are ways to overcome that. And I think also one of the other good things is that we can test so quickly because traders test a lot. So back testing could be done in nanoseconds. And the good thing with the increased lifespan is that that trading can develop over time. So we can perfect it as time goes on. So it's just an interesting look as to what could happen. Now, I want to talk about the four best ways to build your neural connections and to give you some specifics to take home with you. Now, this is really important whether you decide to trade or not, because this is how we build our brains. This is how we stave off things like Alzheimer's. This is also how we enjoy happiness, because they've related this to happiness. It's also how we can combat pain. So I think this is quite a significant topic for us. The first thing you can do to build neural connections and to develop beautiful connections between your little brain cells is to learn an instrument. Now, we want lots of these, but we want them to talk to each other quite intelligently. Now, what this means is that by putting ourselves through discomfort, we actually put pressure on these guys and they release different neurotransmitters. And it forces activity. So the same leads to diminished activity. New and novel leads to extra activity. And that's what these guys need to continue growing. So learning an instrument is really, really important. Now, if you already have two or three, it's learning a new instrument. Shame, isn't it? Yes, I know. We have to keep growing. Learning a different language. They've shown that with the connections in our brain. It's like learning a different language up until the age of 12, what do you think? Pretty easy? Pretty easy. Then something switches off and we have trouble learning a new language, but if we force that into our brain, it can actually really help. Now, this effect starts to flatten out after 7 languages. So you can learn up to 7 languages and still develop your brain beautifully, but people who are so multiply lingual, after the 7th language, things flatten out a little. So it would be far better to actually seek a novel experience at that point. So doing something that you don't usually do, doing something that is exciting, that's new, that's different. Now, remember the list that Michael got us to make and it was talking about some of our dreams? That type of thing, something that inspires you, something that is a little bit dangerous for you. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be jumping out of a plane, although weirdly a lot of our traders do that. Yeah. Who would like to jump out of a plane? view, that would be rather novel. Exercise. This is another big one too. Now, I know you're probably thinking, oh my goodness, I hear this from time and time again. Why am I hearing it everywhere? It's because it works. Exercise works. Now, you know my background. You know how scary it has been for me with my arms. And it really has been a very big block for me, not just in those 3 years, in the recovery process. In the years afterwards, I was terrified that I'd hurt myself, that something would go wrong, that it would come back again. And sometimes it does come back. And during those black times, if you've ever been into the abyss, you know what I'm talking about. During those black times, you don't think you're ever going to get better. Yeah. One of the things I do to convince myself that I am going to stay healthy is I lift ridiculously heavy weights. And it's good because it's conquered a lot for me. It has conquered, I guess, a lot of the negative speech patterns that I was giving myself every day. Now, the nice thing is I'm only 15 kilos off a deadlift world record. That's very, very, very cool. Now, I don't know whether I'm going to go for that world record. Half of me is thinking I might, but I don't know whether I will. But to be so close to being at a world standard is very, very exciting. So exercise is very, very important. It's not just so that you feel better about yourself and you look better. It's actually good for your brain. It's establishing new connections. It's stimulating the ones that are there. It's giving you blood flow. And it's a lovely thing because it's something that everybody can do. I like the idea. I like the idea. My chosen area with exercise is powerlifting. So it's deadlifts, it's bench press, and it's squat. So I did a new personal best finally. Oh, every mental program I try and do a personal best, but this one I was slacking. I don't know what happened. And then Chris Tate came into the gym and bashed me into shape. So I've just done a new personal best squat. I can do an 85 kilo squat. Yeah, so it's nice. Really happy. So 110 kilos off the ground, like that basically. Yeah, an 85 kilo squat. Yeah, which is pretty nifty. So I'm not saying you have to do what I'm doing. That turns me on because it makes me realise that I don't have anything to fear. If I can get strong enough, even if my arms take me backward for a few months, I'll still have enough muscle mass to be able to do a lot better than if I didn't have that muscle mass, if you know where I'm coming from. So everybody's got their own little tricks to try and get them through life in some way. Now, I'd like to chat about three ways to improve your brain from a trading specific level. Now, some of these can be applied to property. So don't just turn off if you don't have any shares. Because this is really quite important. And those that are traders, I know you're going to love it. Firstly, work out your objectives. The traders who do the best are the ones who know exactly why they're trading. And you know, ladies, the most common thing for us is we're trading for other people. We're trading for our family. We're trading to provide a buffer for the family, whether the family involves children or not. We're also trading to support our elderly parents. Now, men, often the objectives involve things. Now, things that you can buy, like my business partner's just bought a Maserati, and oh my gosh, this man does not smile. He beams when he drives that Maserati. It's beautiful, and it's got this excellent guttural, I don't know what that noise is, but it hits you right here, and it goes through your chest. Oh, my goodness, I dream about that too. It's just incredible. Oh, and it's like this slate grey with red leather interior. Very, very, very nice. Now, for him, that was a big thing. That was a really big thing. But for me, I wouldn't have a Maserati on the list because I'm more thinking about the family side of things. Not necessarily right, just different. Yeah. Get a four-door. Yes, get a four-door. Exactly. So I've got my little interim car. I'm going a BM in between. Down the track. When the kids can all drive, then I might do the convertible. Or maybe I'll have two cars because Chris Tate's actually got a second car because when I say to him, can we go shopping on the way home to my house, he can't take the Maserati into the shopping centre. So he's got a four-wheel drive for that. He's got a BMW four-wheel drive. Go figure. But that was high on his list. And the reason why he's got it and I don't is because he had it written down. He had it written down. Now, traders, We need to keep trading diaries. Now, I would suggest it's the same in property. I don't know whether anybody actually does this, but from the trading world, I know I encourage my traders to do this, where you write down with every trade, not just entry, exit, and position sizing, which are the standard things, but also, after you've closed it off, what did I do well and what would I do differently? Now, when I was writing the Trading Secrets book, which is being re-released, I read back through years and years of trading diaries and I distilled what I was doing well and what I should be doing differently, because when you see it in writing, especially in your own handwriting, oh, don't patterns jump out? It's quite embarrassing. You go, really? I had to repeat that 15 times to get the idea? Scary. Who keeps a diary for their property purchases? Does anybody look at it from that side? No. I would really like to see whether this would be something you could incorporate, Michael, because for my traders, it's definitely something that I encourage. The other thing is, write down a trading plan. Now, this is the equivalent of a business plan, but with a trading plan, it covers how to get in, how to get out, and how much money to put into the position. The people who don't write down their plans tend to make it up as they go along. And it's sad to see, because you can have some very naturally gifted traders who think they have a gut feel for the market, who actually dissolve and are inconsistent and cannot focus. So trading plans are very, very important.
Let's say thank you to Louise.
Thank you.